Thomas Green, and I'm president of the IPM Institute of North America.
Tom, let's begin the conversation with some information on an ag retailer's report on the progress of products and services improving water quality in the Great Lakes Basin.
Sure. So back in 2010, I approached a funder, the Great Lakes Protection Fund, about an idea about working with ag retailers, because they're a key influencer of farmer practices, and particularly in the corn and soybean acreage. And I've always wanted to work with those professionals, and finally came up with an idea that I thought was worth pursuing. And the initial thought was that, you know, many farmers have adopted improved practices over time using newer technology to keep nutrients, fertilizers, and other crop inputs out of our surface water, so our rivers, lakes, and streams. And we knew that there were farmers that still had opportunities to improve practices, and our thought was, you know, ag retailers really know who those farmers are, and they could help us identify those farmers and then work with those farmers to improve practices. So what we heard from the ag retailers when we first started meeting with them, however, was that you know, they had been working and communicating with those farmers. And there were, you know, real reasons why farmers were challenged in terms of improving practices. They might be at the end of their career, for example. It might be a small farm without the capital to make the shift. And instead, they suggested, let's work higher up on the adoption curve and focus in on some newer approaches. That could then potentially we could work together to speed adoption throughout the larger body of farmers. And so that's what we decided to do, was identify what are some products and services that ag retailers have to sell where the market, you know, is not saturated, and where we could work together to help inform farmers not only what they could benefit from in terms of their profitability and yields, but how it would also benefit water quality in Western Lake Erie Basin.
So what is that list comprised of?
So it's things that we've been hearing a lot about over the past few years. So we started the project in 2010, and then 2011, we had a huge algal bloom in Western Lake Erie. It was a record, and so it was perfect timing to start talking about things like cover crops. So ag retailers sell cover crop seed, and they also provide and arrange for planting of cover crops in the fall. Variable rate phosphorus application is another key service that ag retailers provide. So rather than taking a few soil samples throughout a field, combining those all in a bucket, and then making a prescription for a fertilizer application for that field based on this one composite sample, what they do is sample in multiple locations throughout the field, either in grids or in zones that are informed by the topography and the yield and so forth. And then you take these multiple samples and you apply fertilizer just where it's needed across the field. So you're applying different rates depending on where you are in the field. If you're in a part of the field that no matter what you do, it's not going to produce much corn, you can reduce the amount of fertilizer that you put there. You know, maybe it's a low wet spot, or maybe it's the top of a knob that's eroded over time and the soil is just not going to produce top yields. And you put that fertilizer where it's going to be needed, where the crop can really take it up and benefit from it. And so you can not only save fertilizer, but you can use it much more efficiently. So you're putting it where it's going to be taken up by the plants and not in a situation where you might have extra sitting around. And it improves both yields and reduces phosphorus losses from the field. And that service in particular has really taken off over the past 5 years.
How has adoption of these practices impacted water quality?
So with the example of the variable rate, by putting the phosphorus where it's going to be taken up by the plant, it leaves less to be lost. So you know, after harvest and the ground is bare, and you get rains in the fall and winter and snow melt events, if you have extra phosphorus sitting there on top of the soil, that can run off. And so the more you can do to minimize the phosphorus that doesn't actually get taken up by the plants, the better off we all are. And then cover crops serve to keep something green growing on that field over the winter. The cover crop itself will take up nutrients that are in the soil and then hold them over the winter. And in the spring, that cover crop dies and you put your cash crop in there, and the cash crop benefits from those nutrients that were held by the cover crop, which might be, you know, rye or something like that, that's planted over the winter. And rather than harvest it, it's just killed in the field, and then you plant into it.
Tom, I have to say, this sounds like a win all the way around. You are seeing improved profits for the farmer if they're becoming more efficient. You're seeing better business for the ag retailers that are making these products and services available. And then everybody wins environmentally. Am I missing something here?
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole point, is a win-win situation, and helping ag retailers promote those products and services with the additional selling point of the benefits in terms of water quality. And you know, farmers and ag retailers, they all like to hunt, fish, and swim, and are very concerned about the water quality and want to do everything they can about it. And when we started the project, we heard from the ag retailers that they really had an opportunity not only to educate their farmer customers, but also their staff about the extent of the problem and the solutions that they had right there in their inventory.
Well, I'm based in Minnesota, another state where water quality is a pretty controversial issue. I'm curious about where you see the partnership going, if it will remain regional, if you're familiar with other similar programs elsewhere in the U.S. So I guess broadening the scope a little bit, Tom, is there anything on that front?
Sure. So our project, we started focused on reducing phosphorus losses in the Western Lake Erie Basin, and that's where our funder asked us to start out. They had some other projects they were funding in that region. It was a real critical issue, a real opportunity to address, and we've seen some great strides in our initial Sandusky River watershed where we started. We've seen huge increases in variable rate, for example. And then 2 years ago, we applied for a second grant from the Great Lakes Protection Fund to expand the project throughout the Great Lakes Basin. And so phosphorus is an issue in a number of watersheds in the basin. Saginaw Bay is another example where we can use the same materials and approaches. And then there are also portions of the watershed that have nitrogen impairments where there's too much nitrogen leaving cropland. And so now we're working to expand to address some of these other issues that are present in the Great Lakes. And we're also having conversations with ag retailers outside of the Great Lakes Basin and others about expanding and connecting to some other efforts that are underway. So in New York State, we're working with the New York Agribusiness Association and the 4R program that's operated by the Fertilizer Institute, which is a national organization. And the idea there is focusing on putting fertilizer in the 4 R's, so the right timing, the right placement, the right form of fertilizer, and the right application method to keep those nutrients on the crop fields. There are a couple other examples. There's an effort in Illinois called Keep It for the Crop that's doing similar work with focusing on nitrogen in that case. And also this past summer we met with some folks out in Iowa who are working to get a project started there, again, focusing on nitrogen, which is the bigger issue in the Mississippi River watershed.
Tom, the only other thing I wanted to ask you about has to do with the fact that you are talking to these ag retailers and product service people all the time. You're also talking to producers all the time. You mentioned some practices that are pretty familiar to most in agriculture, with cover crops and variable rate fertilizer, things that we've seen now for a few years. Are there some things, though, that are in development or on the cusp, even just whispers of ideas, other things that are good for the farmer's bottom line and good for water quality that you might be exposed to but others may not have been to this point?
Yes, that's a very good question. So we've seen variable rate increase from 21% in our Sandusky River watershed when we started the project, and now it's over 70%, and we're running out of new farmers to introduce that to in the Sandusky. We've still seen some good potential to increase variable rate services in other areas, and in fact, we were able to get some funding from the EPA Great Lakes Restoration Initiative to offer a cost share so that farmers who haven't tried it before could get some free acres and try it out, and we're finding that farmers really stick with it and expand it when they have that opportunity. So there's still opportunities for these products and services have been around for a while. But beyond that, there are some great new technologies coming out in terms of fertilizer formulations. And last month, we went out and visited with a number of ag retailers and heard from some of them that they're having good success with some liquid formulations of phosphorus that you apply at planting. And then you can supplement with additional liquid applications in the growing season that you're applying to the plant, to the growing plant. So the more that we can apply the fertilizer closer to the time that the plant needs it, the less likely we're going to lose it. So that's the right time part of the 4 R's. And so we're looking at that as a real strong potential. And there's certainly been a lot of new products coming on the market, people learning the ropes in terms of how much of that fall application that's still made on a lot of fields could be shifted to planting time and during the season.
Tom, how can our listeners learn more about the partnership?
Well, we've got a great website at partnershipfarm.org, and we've got a number of resources there, including our 2016 report, and then also some recorded video webinars. So there's more than a dozen webinars that are available there on demand that people can hear from experts about what they've learned and how to best apply things like cover crops.
Anything else that we haven't covered that you think we should?
Oh, I think for people who aren't intimately acquainted with farming, it's really important to realize that farming is a business like anything else, and we want farmers to be successful and make a good living and be able to invest the extra time and effort that learning these new techniques and experimenting and taking risk affords, and then really appreciate the tremendous efforts that they're making that we often don't hear about. We hear more often about the size of the algal bloom and so forth, and really important for people to realize that farmers and ag retailers are working really hard to address the issue, and we can certainly see the difference in our data and the growth in these products and services over the past few years as people have been really receptive to the messages.